Something that's become increasingly troubling to me is the fact that we are watching in real-time Holocaust denial about what happened during the October 7th massacre. And rather than hearing it from me, who I've got my opinions, but at the end of the day, I wasn't there. I thought it was very important you hear from somebody who was there. Joining me now, Shai Klein Weinstein, who is a survivor of the Nova Music Festival that was going on October 7th when Hamas struck. Shai, thanks so much for giving us your time today.
I appreciate being invited here.
So there's something I need to clear up right from the beginning. It's early morning attack. Why was everybody at a music festival early in the morning? Wouldn't everybody be sleeping around that time?
You'd think so, but this was on Sukkot. And the festival actually began around midnight the previous night, and it was supposed to end 4 in the afternoon the next day.
Gotcha. Okay. Just I'm going through the points one by one by one because there's so much online insanity that I'm just checking what that is. So yes. You're at the festival, you're enjoying yourself, you're having a good time. And then what happens?
Not only am I at the festival enjoying myself, I'm at my very first music festival ever. I've never been to one before. Mm-hmm. And I'm having some of the most fun I've ever had since moving to Aliyah. Just less than a year ago, back in April, I arrived. And it's amazing. Everything's amazing. Great people, great environment. Everybody's happy. Everybody's smiling. There's an overwhelming feeling of joy and love in the air. It's the most positive environment you'll ever find yourself in, ever. And, 6:30 rolls around and rockets start, intercepted right over our heads. We hear the booms, we see them, music stops, everyone takes a pause, everyone looks. There's an overwhelming sense of nervousness, but no one's running for their lives in terror. No one's dying. Nobody's scared they're going to die. People are nervous, people are scared, but nobody thinks they're about to be murdered.
Mm-hmm. So that's all going on, and people are running, and everybody thinks, okay, maybe we need to find a shelter or something with the rockets going on.
I wouldn't say people are running, but people are nervous. People are on edge. You know, in Israel, you're used to rockets. Rockets come, you go to the bunker, you wait 15 minutes, you go about your day. Mm-hmm. Most people are used to rockets. Typically, the rockets end, and that's that. People were starting to leave right away. People knew the festival was over right away. People started to leave. Then many people were like, okay, we'll wait for the rockets to end, and then we'll go home. We'll wait for the traffic to clear up, and then we'll go home. Many people were not in a rush. They were getting ready to go, but they weren't rushing out.
Gotcha. So then what happens after that? Did you see the terrorists parachuting in? Did you see any of that happening? What was your sign that it was time to go?
I didn't see any terrorists parachuting in. Maybe it was deeper into the festival or as the time went on, but we were in the camp area after the rockets went off, and there's a lot of trees there. Not like big trees, but like thin, bushy trees. So we couldn't really see the sky. If there was terrorists parachuting in, I didn't see it myself. My friends didn't see it. Mm-hmm. And we're getting ready to go. We're deliberating. Should we leave? Should we stay? Should we wait for the rockets? Should we wait for the traffic? This, that. We're packing up our things. I'm taking photos, walking around, helping other people pack up their things. Before we actually get to the parking lot, before we actually leave and go to our car, I get back to my friends and I hear off in the distance, really far away, outside of the festival ground, I hear gunfire. And it's really short-lived. It doesn't last long. It's like a quick machine gun fire, sounds like. And I hear this, and I don't know if it is what I'm in fact hearing. I ask my friends. I ask my cousin. Nobody else heard what I heard. And that makes me feel sick. It makes me feel on edge. It makes me feel like something bad, worse is going on than is already happening. And like, you know, rockets alone are enough to make me an anxious mess. But now, thank God, we're packed up. We're ready to go. I don't hear the sound anymore. We're going to the parking lot to leave. Loading up our stuff in the car, say goodbye to people around us, deciding who's going to drive. It's me. I only had one beer that night because I'm not a big drinker. I'm a lightweight. Before we actually get in the car, that's when we all hear gunfire erupt from the festival ground. That's when there's panic. That's when people are running for their lives. That's when there's screaming. That's when there's terror. So we get in the car, myself driving, my cousin in the passenger seat, the girls in the back, and our other three friends in their own car somewhere else. And we leave and we drive towards the exit. And I get to the exit and I see traffic. I see gridlock, dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of cars. And I look to my cousin. I'm like, I don't want to wait for these people. I don't care about them. They're not in my car. I'm not driving them. I want to leave and I'm not waiting. And so I make the decision without even asking. even without even thinking whether our little four-door sedan can do it, drive off the road onto the rocky terrain of the Negev desert, past everybody, past shrubs, past bushes, past trees, past rocks, whatever, pushing my way past everybody to the exit to leave, because I'm not waiting. Car in front of us, stuck behind an empty car. I tell my cousin to let them know it's empty and it's not moving because they don't realize it. He tells them what I told him. They leave, they drive around. And now we can leave. We can't go right down the main road. We can, but I see everyone's going there. More traffic's going to meet us there. It's further south. Can't go left because the police and security have blocked the road to the left because that was the direction of Kibbutz Be'eri, where Hamas was massacring 80% of the population, burning them alive. So our only option was to drive straight ahead of us into an empty field. And that's what I did.
So you take the car through this field, and we saw what happened, that Hamas was going after some of the cars leaving the festival, and that decision probably saved your life.
Yeah. And I took us into the field, and we were not even 50 meters into the field before we had to flee the car. My cousin's girlfriend screams for us to run, leave, flee, run away, run now, get out, run, Mordecai, Shai, everyone out, because we're being shot at. There isn't a guy behind us standing, aiming at our car and shooting us, but everybody around us, we're all being shot at. When you're shot at, you know you're being shot at. You know the bullets are coming at you. So we leave the car, we run. When we get down in the field, we're cowering low. I'm holding on to my friend so tight, I think I might hurt her. And I look back. I see my cousin's girlfriend and her friend next to each other behind us. And I see the back of my cousin's head as he's running back to the car to pick us up. He moves the car out of the way because we blocked the exit into the field, picks us up. And now I'm in the passenger seat filming, taking photos, and he's driving. And we're driving around for what feels like forever, looking for a way out.
So after that, did you guys, I mean, like the story from, you know, from Bereshis, where it talks about not looking back with what was going on with Lot and his wife, is that the kind of thing it was? It was just, you know, let's get the hell out of here. Let's think about ourselves. Let's survive. And how'd you get away without what happened to the rest of it?
Absolutely. There was, we didn't look back. We didn't look around. We didn't try and examine the situation to see what's going on. There was no thought of what's going on behind us. It's behind us. It's not our problem anymore. The only thoughts going through my head, I don't know everyone else. The only thoughts going through my head were, make a decision now or you'll die. Make sure your friends are okay.
Talking with Sean.
All I could do.
Yeah. Go ahead. No.
Sorry. All I could do was take photos, film, help navigate, and that's it. I wasn't driving anymore.
We're talking with Shai Klein Weinstein, who's one of the survivors of the Nova Music Festival in Israel. So you're taking pictures, you're driving, you realize what's happening around you. We thought for so long Israel was invincible. Was there a moment of, is this really happening? Or were you so deep in what's going on, there was no denying what was going on?
We knew what was going on. We knew something bad was happening. We knew something bad was happening right on top of us. We're in the middle of it. You know, I wouldn't use the word invincible. Like, we have always thought would be, we know Israel is a target for many people. We know we're always in danger of something. We just never imagined to be something like this, let alone to us, you know? So we're driving around through these fields. Every time we pass trees, we think we're going to die. Every time we turn a corner, we think we're going to die. We eventually make it to a road. We go right with some cars in front of us, passing abandoned cars, passing cars riddled with bullets, only stopping for checkpoints. And each checkpoint, they ask us the same question. Are you Israeli? Yes. Where are you going? Tel Aviv. Nonstop, abandoned cars, a few checkpoints here and there. Rockets over our heads still, bodies in cars. We reach what we think is another checkpoint, but it's not. It's just a bunch of IDF vehicles in an intersection helping people. Ambulance workers crowded around someone's body on the ground. More rockets, a police car riddled with bullets, body inside. We drive around all of these cars, and I'm thinking, if it's a checkpoint, and they want to stop us, that's something they'll do because they're soldiers and we're not. They don't stop us. We carry on. Passing more abandoned cars, more crashed cars, more bodies in and around cars, making it to the highway. And now on the highway, one of the first cars I see on our side of the road, a silver car facing the wrong way, facing us on the shoulder, driver dead in the seat, shot in the face. I see this very clearly. I don't think my cousin sees it because he's tunnel visioned on just driving. I've been telling the girls the whole time in the back seat to keep their heads down low between their legs in case they're shot. In case we're shot, they don't get hit. Holding their hands in the back, passing around water, telling my cousin he's doing such a good job driving. Telling my cousin he's a hero. He's saving us. I love you so much. Mordecai, you're doing such a great job. You know, the whole time saying that, helping me and my cousin's girlfriend, helping navigate him with Waze because he can't look at Waze while he's driving. Passing more cars, abandoned, bodies inside them, bodies on the ground next to them. Past those cars, another silver car on the shoulder of the road stopped, and two figures next to this car, two men. And we get so close, we can tell you what they're wearing. Blue jeans, cargo pants, t-shirts, black t-shirts, one with a tactical vest, the other without, both holding machine guns. And one of the men raises his gun towards us, but for whatever reason, not relevant anymore, he doesn't shoot us. And in the car next to them, both of us, all of us, see very clearly two bodies, two dead bodies, a man and a woman, and the driver in the passenger seat, very obviously dead. One of the men, his back is to us, and we see his hands are the color red with blood. And we lose our minds. We tell my cousin to drive. He slowed down for a split second just to comprehend what he was seeing. We tell him to drive and drive fast. Sa, sa, sa. Drive in Hebrew. Go, 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 go. Don't slow down fast. Leave. And we speed off, passing another car on the side of the road, trunk open, belongings all over the ground. And then from the left to the right, from the shoulder to the middle of the road, one, two, three bodies. We have to drive around them the best he can. My cousin still running over the legs. We think we're approaching another checkpoint around a kilometer or two after. It's not. It's just IDF vehicles stopped in the road. We pull up next to one of them, and the soldiers tell us we have to leave. We have to back up. We have to get out of here because it's not safe, because there's terrorists hiding in the bush. And I look ahead of us in between the other two cars, and there's two dead officers in the ground. And we tell them we can't leave. We tell them what we saw. We tell them what we experienced, and we have to go this way to Tel Aviv, because from the Negev desert where we were, there's not many roads to Tel Aviv. This is one of them. They let us through. The whole time we're driving by, I think we're going to get shot and die from wherever these men are hiding. They're going to see us as an easy target. But they don't. And the only time we stop is for other checkpoints. The only time we slow down is to go around bodies or crash cars. And all of that, we make it back home to my cousin's apartment in Tel Aviv at 9:45 in the morning.
I'm almost afraid to ask the next question. You mentioned there was another car with you guys. Did they follow you? Did they get out?
One of the other cars, when we left the fields and we turned onto that main actual street, that car made a U-turn and went the other way. So it was just us from that point on. Other cars passing us, going the way we came. But our three friends who we were with, there was eight of us, it's five of us in the car. Our three friends are not answering their phones, texts, calls, nothing. Not from their friends, not from their families. We don't hear from them for almost the whole day and night until the next morning, maybe. I don't remember. It's all a blur. We think they're dead. We think they've been murdered. We have no idea what's going on with them. And only after way too many hours, we learned they were okay. They were saved. They hid in a bush for 6.5 hours with Hamas terrorists so close to them, they could hear them talking in Arabic.
So, wow, I'm blown away by your story. I'm absolutely blown away by your story. We're talking with Shai Klein Weinstein about surviving the festival. I can't even comprehend something like this. So when you hear people denying that any of this ever happened, you know, I have said to people's face, I have seen the October 7th footage for myself, and they still will say, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. It's all manufactured. It's all fake. What would you say to them?
Listen, I could have very well, in the very beginning, sold my photos to Time Magazine or The Telegraph or The Guardian or CNN or whoever. I could have said, listen, I'll give you these photos. I'll give you these videos exclusively if you pay me. I could have made money from it. I could have profited in some manner. I didn't. I've made no money from any of this in any form. I have no job. I have no apartment. I'm unemployed. I'm not making money from anything. I'm on this speaking tour. I'm still not getting paid because I don't want to. I don't benefit in any way, shape, or form from making anything up or lying or exaggerating or embellishing or anything adjacent to those words. There's no benefit to me. There's no benefit to Israel. There's no benefit to my friends in Israel. There's no benefit to the dead. There's no reason, because I took all these photos and film. I took these videos myself. I saw it with my own eyes. The people I spoke to at the festival who had been murdered, they're really dead. They don't exist anymore. So for these people to say it's not real is just absurd, because these people most likely have never left their city or state.
Yeah. And yesterday when I was talking to you, we met over at one of the pro-Israel rallies they had around here where they brought you out to speak. I remember I said to you, and I was so impressed with you when I said this to you, I said, are you okay? Do you need a break? And you said something to the effect of, there's nowhere else I'd rather be. This is what I need to be doing. I feel like I have to do this. You want to expand a little bit on that?
Yeah. Like, I don't speak Hebrew. I'm not born and raised in Israel. I don't have a thick accent. I only know English, but I know it quite well. What we experienced, incredibly horrible, like a nightmare situation you'll never imagine in your life being in. But many people got it so much worse. What we had is awful. Terrible. but so many people witnessed horrible things that I would not wish upon them to talk about it more than they have to or more than they want to. Many of them don't have a high enough level of English to properly convey their feelings and their experiences. And so I'm happy to share my experience and my story and the story of those I've met and photographed as many times as possible, because I think it's helping more than any possible military service that I could ever do.
Guy, before we let you go, it seemed like Israel was on the verge of tearing itself apart before all this happened. And you had the religious people fighting with the non-religious people all over politics and judicial reform and all this stuff. How do you feel watching what's going on in Israel right now, what's going on with the Jewish world right now? Because you and I probably have very little in common aside from the fact that we're both Jews. We probably disagree on politics, probably disagree on religion, probably disagree on a whole bunch of stuff, aside from the fact that we both love Israel and both Jews. And I'm watching people come together from all walks of life right now in a way I've never seen before. Does that give you strength? Does that give you hope? What do you think about that?
It's amazing, you know? People who are extreme right are now more in the middle. People who are extreme left are now more in the middle. You know, one way I tell people the only way we're going to achieve world peace is if aliens invade. An enemy, everybody can get, you know, everybody can get behind, say, like, we have to support each other to get past this, is one of the best ways to get together and see how much support you have. Like, there's a lot of hate, there's a lot of anti-Semitism, but from within Israel and within the Jewish community, we know how much support we have. But it's really been brought to light, to my attention, how much support we have from outside of our community, from outside of Israel, from outside the Jewish community, from Jews around the world. It looks like, you know, all the hate is so loud and there's a new wave of anti-Semitism, and it's a new thing, but it's not new. These people have always felt this way towards us. They've always felt this way towards Israel. It's not a new thing, but we do, in fact, for a fact, have more support now than ever before, even if it's not as loud. It's there. It exists.
Well, Shai, thank God you're okay. Baruch Hashem, you survived. Thank God your friend survived.
Ta-da.
I'm so impressed that you're out there telling your story, because I mean, I like to say, yeah, I got a microphone, I'm more than happy to talk, but I don't know if I'd be as vocal as you are after what you saw. So I just want to say, like, I'm in awe of you, and thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
It, you know, this would not be possible if it wasn't for the people who proposed this to me. You know, two entrepreneurs from Israel who started this thing called Faces of October 7th. They gave me this thing that, like, said, Shai, we have something for you. And before they even told me what it was, I said yes. I refused rescue flights back to Canada. I didn't want to leave my friends, my family, my people I love. But I'm here in North America, going around the East to West Coast to students and communities all over, sharing these photos and videos and my experience. And it's all thanks to them, because they made it possible for me and several other survivors who are in the States doing the same thing. And I'm so grateful.
God bless you, Shai. Thank God you're okay. Really appreciate you joining us.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it very much.